I think one of the reasons this works for us is because we really understood who our customers were and that we couldn't solve for everything and that it was going to limit our growth. And so we really see those partners as a value add to our organization, not that every dollar has to go into our pockets.
Welcome to SaaS Connect, the SaaS Partnership Podcast, brought to you by the Cloud Software Association. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com.
So hi, nice to meet everybody. I'm Maria Pergolino, as mentioned. I have given this presentation a few times, and it's a little bit different than other presentations that I've done in that at the end of the presentation, sometimes people come up and they want to talk. And what I often hear is, after a presentation, is somebody saying, this is the idea I took from you, or this is what I'm going to do based on what you did. This presentation is to share that everybody's path is different. And the cliff notes on the whole presentation is really about trying to trigger some ideas in how you're going to find your differentiation, whether that be across your company or in what you do, and to maybe feel okay going against the grain. So I'm going to share some of the things that has worked at ActiveCampaign. And if all of us did the exact same things, they would no longer work at ActiveCampaign. But it is a little bit of a story about doing things a little bit different and finding what's special for you in that. Many of these ideas I did not come up with, I did not run out, but I think it is a little bit of a special story and an atypical one. I feel reasonably qualified to represent this for the company because the company's done pretty well. And it may be for many of you a company you haven't heard of. We announced earlier in the year, we're over $200 million in revenue. I think I have a chart. But essentially, the company is a 20-year-old company, maybe close to 20 years old, but the platform itself was built in 2016. So again, right from the start, very atypical. It's not a, hey, we got out first, you know, minimum viable product and that fast shift forward. Instead, it was founded 2003. The platform itself, it was on-premise before this, did not come out until 2016. And then since then, we have added 150,000 customers. And you may think to yourself, how could they have 100? That's as many. The last published number that Salesforce shared in number of customers was the same. How can they have that many customers and they don't have the same brand that some of the other unicorn tech has? And that is because of some of that different path that I'm going to share. We've grown through a viral motion. We're very global. And I'm going to get into some of that different approach and maybe trigger some ideas for you to do things a little bit different to create that difference in market. I'm trying to think of what we do, just to context it. Email marketing, marketing automation, CRM. These are all areas that it is a lot of players in those markets. And so that differentiation is key. You may be in a space where maybe that differentiation is needed, but we are forced into a situation where finding our own path has been very important. We bring those areas together and call it customer experience automation, which has been important for our buyers because it's something that resonates with them, which is maybe the first hint in some of the things that we did. We did mention that 170 different countries. It is that global piece. I think that is great. You'll notice I mention our integrations here because I know so many of us are here because we care about partnerships. I'm not going to lean too much into specific partner strategies, but more again, just trying to let everybody think about how they want to do things different. So hypergrowth is often like a word that maybe even is building a negative connotation, and it comes with this hustle culture or this. Right now, I don't know if anybody's noticed some stuff's going on with Twitter. And that is not what this company is. It's a company out of the Midwest. It's the largest private SaaS company in the Midwest right now, I think. That different approach is core to who the company is. And so it is also like, it does not have to be maybe what your investor or what you did at the last company, that path does not have to be the same. And so some of the things that we've done. So I mentioned our market. We are partners with Salesforce. We don't compete against them. I'd say our top competitor is HubSpot. There's a lot of players in this market. And what we were able to do is find an area of it that was really underserved. We sell to smaller companies. And that may be obvious, like that may sound obvious, but it is almost the opposite recommendation of every investor that we talk to, that there's this need to have those enterprise clients, to have the big names, to secure that quickly. And it was a bold move for the company to not put that pressure on itself to start growing upstream. So even for brands that start with smaller organizations, they often get that start going. And then there's this push to go upstream where we are firmly committed to serving the customers that we served on day one. Some of the things that that has allowed for is it's a market because they're underserved, because we're purposeful there. They're very excited about it. So I'll get into advocacy a little bit, but that has allowed for our viral growth. And to give some context, and these numbers are rough, but I think I would say HubSpot would be our top competitor. We're about the size they were probably in about 2016, 2017. I think our cost of acquisition is about 30% less than theirs at that time. And so the market right now valuing those lower acquisition costs, looking for profitability in a faster way, that has been really important to our business, is sticking to this market where there is that viral and people are excited to spread the word for us. If we look in our space, there are people that often focus on, hey, we can do it all. So for small business, we think small businesses, they're simple. They don't have the resources to do complex things. But if you think about maybe a Series A tech company, it's not a start of simple. They're trying to set up the scale for the future of their business. And we're seeing more and more complexity, more and more creativity from smaller businesses. Technology is core to them. And so having a platform that is not a couple of like free tools put together called an all-in-one, but a more robust solution is critical for their success. But it is making that robust solution accessible and obvious and not overcomplicating things that has been important for us. As it comes to point solutions, a smaller business often doesn't want is than 50 of those solutions. So we've really focused on integrations and making sure that if a smaller business or a growing business comes with technology, we can leverage that technology and then bring them forward. And so that partner strategy, and I said I wouldn't go too much into partnerships, but that has been critical that we can connect to the solutions where maybe we can't fill, which has been successful for us. The company itself started out bootstrapped. That 2003, when it started to 2016, there was no funding. And it wasn't until the new platform was launched and we were over $10 million in revenue that then we took our first funding of $10 million. So I was thinking about it as like how easy it would be to get a mortgage when you already have that much money in the bank. Our second round followed that same methodology. And what that really gave us was the ability to focus on more long-term growth. And again, I think this is something on paper that sounds obvious, but is often not what companies do. And having that, being able to have a true platform strategy, something broad, we had to be able to focus on the long term. It was not going to be on those first few quarters that we were going to be able to satisfy any investor. And so that has really given us strength that has continued forward. It also, right, makes our equity more valuable to those early employees. There's lots of gains from having this balanced approach. We really shy away from, even still today, things that we consider vanity metrics. I hire marketers all the time that are really worried about proving their area of the business when really, if we're not growing overall, taking the time to what I would consider some more vanity things, which bucket it came from doesn't really matter. And so being able to really take that long-term thinking has mattered for us. There's a word in here, optionality, I'm going to talk about more in a second. And then you've already heard global has been important. So in those 150,000 customers, over about half of them are outside of the US. That is very atypical. My background, and I didn't properly introduce myself, but I have worked in tech for the majority of my career. I have been a marketer almost my, you know, I mean, I did like a tiny bit in finance when I finished my MBA. But when somebody asks me what I do, I say I help companies grow from about 100 million to IPO. And I did so, I was at a company, Marketo, and always in sales and marketing tech. Marketo, I then was at a company called Aptus. I then was with Anaplan through their IPO, and now I'm at ActiveCampaign. And what you see in companies that go from, you know, that tech start through that the IPO phase is often you start with a focus in tech. Your first customers are tech. It's because they're willing to adopt earlier. And then you start maybe moving into, depending on what your product is, financial services or healthcare, or you'll start going into other verticals. You often start, because it's starting in tech, selling in North America, unless you were founded maybe outside of the US. But even if you weren't, you probably end up over here pretty quickly. And then global is part of the longer term strategy. This company really flipped that upside down, saw underserved markets. And because we were going to serve at a good price, the focus was on easy provisioning, what is repeatable. And we knew we could deliver with value. We knew international markets were going to be something that we could reach to pretty easily. And so that changes the whole strategy, right? So you think, yeah, it's easy to focus on a differentiation point, but what that meant is not your typical start or approach with things like sales and marketing. We started serving from a self-serve perspective. We have a free trial. These were all baked in, but also with that, having a product that was available in lots of languages to start was something that was put in early or something thought of when the platform was concepted, which has really helped our business. So building in that differentiation from the start, and again, not because it was a landscape that was already had lots of people in it, going to the places where there weren't others and being able to serve there, committing to having, and this presentation is called Using Customer Experience. We could create that customer experience in places where others weren't, which gave us this viral motion and allowed people to spread the word, again, leading to that lower acquisition cost. The other thing it helped us with is like not doing what a big mistake that I've seen tech companies make, especially when you focus on that enterprise, is you get a customer that like just ends up, some big customers that end up giving you a very complex view of what they need. And so your roadmap starts going into a lot of complexity in a narrow kind of lane, as opposed to being able to serve a broader group. And it makes it harder to go into other industries because their needs may not be as complex as the needs maybe of your tech customers that are early adopters. And so that global view also gave us this, like, we weren't focused on a single persona. We weren't focused on a single like role as that, you know, ICP or persona or whatever you want to talk about as we started. And so we ended up building that, again, that true platform as opposed to something narrow and then just getting narrower and narrower. I said I was going to get back to optionality. This is a word we use a lot in our business. And sometimes it's to be purposeful about bringing optionality in. Sometimes it's to say, hey, we have to focus here. So optionality is not always the best path. But I think I mentioned we don't have a single use case. We don't have a single persona. And so making sure that we were never getting ourselves into a specific kind of box. One of the things that I think the company does beautifully is we have something called recipes. But essentially, when you build an automation flow, you can take it as a link and move it into another, you can just pass it to another customer. So you could build something very complex and then hand it to somebody and they could implement it very easy. That was because we wanted to be able to serve lots of use cases, and that optionality was, this was a way to spread that optionality. But it also comes to this example here where no customer, and this was a policy of the company from day one, was allowed to represent more than 0.5% of revenue. And again, I said this presentation should inspire other things. If you are building a product for enterprise, this is not the right approach for you. But are there some things that are controversial? Are you willing to turn some deals away? Are you willing to focus in some area to give you, in this case, we said we were not going to take those bigger deals because that was going to give us optionality across the platform. So it was kind of being focused to then allow for not focus somewhere else. And so where are the places where you're going to say, hey, this is just, we're going to create some barriers here to allow us to do what we want to do. And then this is the one side. I mean, we truly believe that we do not have to build everything. It's exciting to follow Salesforce and the AppExchange, kind of in their talk. I feel like I have been part of the ecosystem for so long. But I think making sure that when somebody is thinking about buying ActiveCampaign, nobody starts a business and says, I need ActiveCampaign first. They come to us when they want to grow. So somebody will have created a website, somebody will have created an e-commerce store, and then they come to us. And instead of forcing them to then move into our blog or our platform, really making sure we can connect to those tools, but then also understanding that there's lots of tools that they want to add and not making them feel stuck. And really coming with that partner first approach has been really important. We talk about partners in every conversation. We are excited about sometimes friction that's caused in the organization when somebody says, hey, did we think about our partners here? And I think that's been really important to our success. And if you're sitting on the partner side saying like, why isn't my company doing that? I think one of the reasons this works for us is because we really understood who our customers were and that we couldn't solve everything and that it was going to limit our growth. And And so we really see those partners as a value add to our organization, not that every dollar has to go into our pockets. This is my favorite. I know that we're standing like right before lunch. We should not have mentioned McDonald's beforehand, but it's not doing everything that makes sense on paper. And this is a little bit in that it kind of, this is all kind of weaving together in being able to not have to just have short-term thinking, being able to put some stakes in things. But two examples here. The first one is my favorite. So realizing that customer adoption is critical, especially with smaller customers, that the decision was made that we were not going to charge for implementation and for migration. And for any of you, most of you probably use some type of marketing automation or tool. In almost all cases, you have to start, the original contract comes with some type of implementation fee, some type of quick start, whatever you want to call it. And it's a way for companies, if you don't stick around, to make sure they're not losing money on that interaction, right? But for us, we said, hey, we're going to eat this cost. We're going to take this cost and we're going to make sure that that implementation goes well. It's going to be an expense for our business. It's not going to be profitable, but we think it's going to pay out long-term in our LTV and it's going to pay off in the long run. As early on, it was a big bet for the company, but it's something that has allowed us to grow to that 150,000 customers. It's reducing risk for them. We're taking that risk, but then they're more likely to get started with us. Another example, we have what we call our customer success commitment. We commit that we're not going to raise your price for 2 years. And the reality is we've never raised a price for a customer unless they've expanded to a different tier or more contacts in how we price. The reason our commitment is 2 years is because that's what I could get through with legal. But putting some things that we're watching, we see negative press for our competitors that are constantly raising prices for their base. And saying, hey, we're going to do this a little bit different. We're not going to try to gouge our current customers to, if we're going to say we're going to do customer experience and customer success well, let's really stand by that. Let's put a commitment in place and make that commitment our differentiator. Again, reducing risk for our customer, but really putting something behind that. We commit to that value. We commit to these services in contract, in writing. We call it our customer success commitment, but that serves us in the long run, which has been incredible. Just to give like a different way that this can roll out if you don't have the ability to go and kind of argue with legal about what your pricing strategy is going to be for forever, which is kind of the mountain I decided to climb. Another example is our ASP is smaller. It's really hard to prove the value of sponsoring events or putting on events, but we decided, hey, we have to get out there. We have to create some best practices. The best practices that are out there are for enterprise organizations. We have to help people get started and do this at scale. And we're going to start that education. And it's not going to be profitable. We're going to place a bet here. And what we found is we didn't think we would be able to. We actually were able to create a nice amount of business and drive results from in-person events. We were able to find a way to do them at scale, and do them in a low cost way so that it wasn't a massive expense for the organization. And what it did for us from an advocacy perspective, and not only just getting people that were excited to then talk about the brand, but the early people that attended these events ended up becoming like now have full businesses where they're implementing ActiveCampaign, where they're helping companies with ActiveCampaign. So it's actually how we ended up developing our first agency partners, which is really incredible as well. It's not what we were expecting, but we placed a bet and it really played out for us. This kind of goes into that a little bit more. This talks about that customer success commitment and some of those recipes. The other thing that we do is we put, compared to other brands, either of our size or when they were at our size, more into R&D. We take that efficiency that we're getting and it's gone into development. It's allowed us to have that broad platform. Again, in what we want to do, being okay that there are partners that we connect to that can do things that our customers need better, but this has served us well. And then I can't stress this enough. And if you are sitting in a chair right now, whether you're the CEO for a brand or the marketer or the head of partnerships, you have to be able to use the product and you have to make sure that you're the best customer of that product, whatever the part of the business it serves. I know that this gets complicated if you are like delivering something for the medical field and you're not a medical company. I get that then that gets tricky, but we push our own platform. We are our own best users of the platform. And it changes the way we make decisions as a company. There's always a product expert in the room, regardless of whether it's a product conversation or not, because the whole, like our marketing team can use this, our solution, our sales team, the whole company can see things from our customer's perspective. When we're talking about customer experience, it's very easy to not be empathetic of the customer, especially when you have 150,000 of them and that some of them are so far, they're speaking another language, they're so far removed from the company itself, but being able to use that solution. And this is another one, like a lot of the things in this presentation seem obvious, but when you start adding them up and thinking about, are we really doing this? It really is what makes the difference in a company. When I talk to my teams, one of the things I talk about with hypergrowth and how we achieve success is that if you're doing just what everybody else does, you're going to get the same results. And I always talk about if you want to do, I say this all the time, if you wanted to do something exceptional, you have to do something exceptional, right? And so choosing a couple of things where you're going to be exceptional are going to make that difference. If you don't make a couple of those, if you can't think of what those things are for your company, it's going to really be hard to get an outsized result, which is ultimately what we're going for when we're trying to become that unicorn or become that public brand or become a brand like Salesforce. There has to be something special. And what is amazing in that, and let's use Salesforce as an example, we could all, I bet you agree, we all probably couldn't agree on what the best sandwich is at lunch, but we could probably all agree on what Salesforce has done incredible, their marketing, their focus on their employee knowledge around product. Like you can see those things then externally. We want, and we're earning our way to it still, but we want to be known for customer experience. We think about these things that are going to make a difference there. I think you really have to be purposeful about yours if you want to have that outsized success. I also think if you're thinking this is not my role in the company, I would challenge that as well. I think every company has these. If I think about some of the work Bain's done, they talk about like company heroes, people that are able to find their way to bring these sparks to the company from all through the organization, and not being scared to find those places, highlight that and bring that forward is something that you anybody can do that is really special for an org. And then finally, a lot of the things like our product is like essentially automation. And so one of the things that we worry about is like over automating versus using that automation to give us more on that personal side. So how do we make it that we're using our own product well so that we can have less people in marketing, but more people in customer support? And really being purposeful about that, a little way that we have done this, but I think makes a massive difference. Do you ever get an email from a brand? You've saved up, you buy something, maybe it's for a child or a parent, and you're so excited and you get the order confirmation and something's maybe not right and you want to reply and the subject line is like that company's name and then do not reply to this email, unmanned box, forget it, it's going to go into a pit. We made a policy in our company that like we will not have that type of email. We had actually done it and somebody complained and we're like, this doesn't make sense. Like we're over automating this. Why aren't we trying to help? And so we have a policy in our company that you cannot have that type of, we actually in our customer success commitment said, you find any email for us and send an email to it, we will find a way to get it and respond. And so small things like that, you think, does that even matter in an organization? But I think that matters more than we think. And taking a stand on that, again, reducing risk for the customer because they know if I get stuck, I'll at least be able to get to somebody, has been really important for us. And so this mix of like automating things to then be able to bring ourselves forward has been pretty great. So that's what I have. Those are just, and again, I hope this sparks some ideas for your organization. You can put all of these, none of these can work for you, but like, what are you going to do different? How are you going to get your unfair share by doing things your way and not just trying to do the list of what everybody else does? Thank you. I did it fast. We're gonna get caught back on track. Are we doing some questions?
So obviously I'm a big fan of ActiveCampaign because we've invited you guys to come to our conference year on year and year on year, seeing your journey, hitting 200 million ARR. Wow, that's amazing. One of the things that you mentioned is now you're running events all across the world, I guess, 200 small business events. And I mentioned it yesterday, Constant Contact is famous, but that's how they grew their channel, a lot, large ground game. And you mentioned that this is also where you're recruiting agencies, which are really important to small businesses. I think for a lot of us who are thinking about building channel, especially with agencies, that's a story that we maybe tap into. Like, how do these events work and how do the agencies fit in? and how are you building relationships with agencies?
Yeah, to be fair, I like that as an example, but we really haven't gotten back into things kind of yet. We're thinking about it now as it relates to COVID, especially because some of the countries we would have done them in are kind of where the US was about a year ago. So we have to think about some things differently. It's actually super interesting serving companies so broad. A lot of our companies in the last couple of years have gone to our customers asking about what they care about for diversity. Although the word diversity means something totally different in 170 different countries. And so you have to think about things a little bit differently. For the events, what worked is not having to overproduce. And that's how we could do so many of them. It was in a box. These are the types of locations we use. This is the minimum we need to be able to have that. How do we make it that only one or two people have to go out to them? And then how do we make it that it is standard for those partners so that we could do it in rapid succession? One of the things that happens in marketers, and I know this whole room isn't marketers, but I always get really weary when somebody says, what is the budget for this? Because the answer is like the budget is as much as we need to do it to get a great return, but not like a dollar more, right? There's diminishing returns. And a lot of times what we see with events is those diminishing returns, we build them up. And then we have a sales team that maybe afterwards takes people out to a big dinner and then that adds the cost. And so trying to get it down to what you need to get the outcome has been really important. And then not, again, like finding partners that will take some of that. So maybe we don't do that dinner afterwards, but we just say, hey, you want to do something afterwards? It's all yours. We're not going to produce it, but we'll promote it for you. And just being comfortable with that and not having to have a 30-page contract with it, but just saying, hey, I'll do this for yours, you do this for mine, something like that has just worked for us.
If you like this and want more great insights on software partnerships, you've got to rate, like, and subscribe, and join us at thecloudsoftwareassociation.com. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com. We'll see you on the next episode.